Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. This week, we're talking to the Ragin' Cajun himself,
John Morgan. Some of us were fortunate to watch him play at the Looney Bin over the summer. And this guy has a lot of wisdom to share. He's hilarious. I recommend you go look him up. He's got so much attitude. And
he doesn't sugarcoat anything.
No, but he's so dang sexy about it.
Oh. He is.
The other thing that is sexy, I'm going to go ahead and have to say, is the Monarch. That's a restaurant. They have the sexiest chicken tenders I've ever tasted.
I love getting my Moscow Mule over there.
I know. Yeah, and the copper mugs. Those are really in right now.
See?
Yeah, don't forget, we have the Brooks Wheelan show happening October 20th. That's a Tuesday at 8 o'clock at Roxy's, and that would not be possible without local businesses like the Monarch or
42 Below.
42 Below. You can go there and get, they have like the largest selection in Kansas, I heard, on glass pieces and water pipes.
They're where I get all my juice for my little try to not smoke machine.
Yeah.
And that's, they've got all the setup. If you want to try and vape instead of suck down those cancer sticks, they'll hook you up down there too.
Yeah, you can find 42 Below right off of Douglas near Lucky's.
Mm-hmm.
So Douglas in Washington.
Yeah, and the Monarch is right down at the Delano roundabout.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a big garage door. It says The Monarch Gastro Pub.
Yeah, you can't miss it. It's so good. Try those sweet potato tots. They got duck bacon on them.
Hell yeah. All right, so we're going to take you to that time. I didn't get to be there. I'm a little upset, but, you know, schedules, day
but
jobs.
All of the aspiring comics on the Midwest Digest podcast got to be there, so that's...
I'm not an aspiring
comic.
Well,
at that time, you weren't. You didn't... Blake, you weren't doing stand-up.
This was 2 months ago. This was after... Anyway, we're not going to get into semantics.
Sorry.
We're just going to take you to that time we talked about.
I overspoke. I misspoke.
He's fucking funny. Give him a listen.
All right.
Thanks, y'all.
Thanks.
Midwest Digest.
We're here with Ragin' Cajun John Morgan. Did I get that right?
Absolutely. Wouldn't have mattered if you didn't.
And then, of course, we got Jessica. Dan is here, which is weird. Dan and I in the same room.
Yes.
But we'll get over it. And then Pat.
What's up?
So, go ahead. Go for it. Take the lead.
Let me ask the first question.
Yeah.
Ragin' Cajun. I'm Dan the Man. I like the rhyming thing. Where did it come from? Where did it start?
University of Southwestern Louisiana, which is now the University of Louisiana Lafayette. And I was there through my undergraduate and graduate degrees. And in my final year, I was final 2 years of my master's, I was in student government president. And I wore the badge of Ragin' Cajun, something fierce. And then when I was doing comedy... while I was putting myself through school, you know. And I finally hooked up with a mentor out of Columbia, Missouri, the comedy club Deja Vu. And he said, what's this early stuff of you with Ragin' Cajun? And I said, yeah, I don't want to be that Cajun comic. I don't want to be that known Cajun thing, you know what I mean? And he laughed at me, and he never let me drop it. And so it was probably the best thing anybody's ever given me in advice in comedy was to hold on to the Ragin' Cajun. One, because of my delivery is not one of peace and harmony. I rage through it at times, you know. And then who would have known 10, 15 years after I started comedy, Cajun's probably the hottest thing on the market right now.
Right.
More films were filmed in Louisiana in 2013 and 14 than anywhere else in the country.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of glad I hung on to it, you know what I mean? That's basically where it came from.
You're Cajun before Cajun was cool, right?
It was just, yeah, who would have known, you know? at that particular time, and I just hung on to it, and I was glad that I did. You know, I was glad somebody convinced me of being glad of who you are and where you're from and why you're that way and what is it that you bleed, you know, and what is it that drives you. And Raging Cajun seemed to fit very well, and it's prospered me for 20 years of comedy, you know.
Wow.
You said you were working on your master's. What's your master's in?
It's done. That's been over.
Right, but what
interpersonal
what,
communication.
Okay.
That's
so that fit right in.
It didn't fit in at all.
No.
No, not at all. Interpersonal deals with one-on-ones.
Sure.
Mass communication deals with what maybe it should, but okay. I communicate to my audience as if I'm speaking to them one-on-one. So you could take whatever I'm saying on stage and place one person in that room, or I could say whatever I'm saying on stage and it could be a mass arena of people, and I still speak to that individual, which is the one thing that it did help me. It also taught me discipline, you know. The undergraduate degree was a lot of fun and a lot of growing up and maturing. The master's put your ass in check. That's all there is to it, you know. And your faculty will make sure of that, you know. They're not there to fuck around.
Yeah.
They're there to do what has to be done and see what you have to offer and then move from there. And so I don't know if... I'm so glad I finished school. I'm so glad I finished college because that's something nobody can ever take away from me. And a lot of times comedians don't have anything. Don't have a fucking thing. Don't have a fucking clue. And 10 years into it, they're still opening acts or feature acts, and they're finding their way, and there's nothing else they can fall on, you know. I was having this conversation earlier, and I worry about a lot of my good friends in the business. You know, what the fuck are you going to do when this is over? What you got to fall back on? Now, there's the other side to that coin of, no, prosper on with your dream, you know. Yeah, well, you better not have a fucking family in the interim, bitch. Because diapers can't be bought on some fucking dream.
I think... sorry.
That's okay. I was going to ask you, like, so you're from Louisiana. Like, growing up, was there comedy in the house? Like, how was your home life, like, growing up?
Fucking bizarre.
Yeah.
And it was... Yeah, there was nine children.
Nine kids, yeah.
Mal, Debbie, Stevie, Dolores, Donna, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You know, people said, y'all were religious. No, Dad liked fucking Mom, and we just kept popping out. But my father had no high school education. And my mother was a homemaker, and she could rob Peter to pay Paul. She could take leftovers and make them look like, a five-course entree meal. I mean, she was phenomenal.
Yeah.
There was something unique. Nobody was ever denied what they wanted to do in life. You know, you had some perimeters you had to grow up in because there was an old World War II dad, and he boxed the fuck out you. But there was a... You know, if you could do something, you were encouraged to do it. Mm-hmm. And if you couldn't do anything, by the time you hit 18, you better fucking have something because you were gone. There was no, you know, okay, stay another year with us. No, it's 18. Get the fuck out of here, dog.
Sink or swim.
Your time's done, boo. Lie you.
So who was the funny parent, your mom or your dad?
Both of them in their own right. I think they did that from being middle class, lower to middle class, you know. I think you had to have joy. And a woman that births nine children for a man's got some kind of fucking sense of humor. Mm-hmm. If not, that bitch is plumb ass retarded. And my mother was not retarded. She was a brave and courageous woman, but in her own day. And they grew up in that era. You know, my parents, or most parents' grandparents' age, you know. My parents would be 90, 92, and 90, whatever, 90. So they're World War II parents, and you grew up around the household. You grew up watching Lawrence Welk. You grew up watching, you know, Red Skelton and the old Dean Martin roast and Carol Burnett. And you grew up watching those shows, and everybody laughed, and everybody was something. Or you sit around in Louisiana culture, and you eat crawfish, and you sit around that table. And, you know, and my father never allowed somebody to do something for him. He always had to do it himself, you know, as... refrigerator, I'll build you one of them. You know, no, you fucking can't, you know. But damn sure, there'd be something that looked like a fucking refrigerator in the backyard. You know, so what do you
think? I have a quick question. So, like, you talk about your kids a lot in your stand-up. What do you think what did your parents bitch about, I don't know, like, what did your parents bitch about when it comes to kids?
first and foremost that comes to my mind with my mother and father, first and foremost, was utmost respect. You didn't fuck around with them. Mm-hmm. You know, if there was a joking going on and everybody was in the midst of something, that's one thing. But in day-to-day irony of life, day-to-day grind of life, my mother did it, my father backed her. My father did it, you did it. My father said it, you did it. There was no questions that we have today with kids, you know, questioning. And we often try to take the whole idea of, yes, but that's how they learn. And we take this spread the wings of peace, dove, and tranquility with children. And we want to know why they're shitty. And we want to know why they disrespect teachers. And we want to know why teachers are getting burned out when they're in their 40s rather than in their 50s or 60s. We're wondering why people who go, you know what, I would like to go into education, go into it and go, what the fuck was I thinking? You know, because there's a dilemma of adolescence now that is just soaked up with, you got rights. We didn't have rights growing up as a kid. You didn't fucking have rights. There was no room. Oh, knock before you come in. You fucking kidding me? Oh, my God. I don't think my ass is big enough, but I would have had a door shoved in my ass if I would have told them, you need to knock first. Nine kids, one bathroom. Nine kids, one bathroom.
Is it an outhouse?
No, but it was just a song. It should have been.
It happened.
You know what I mean?
My mom, she was raised in Kentucky. Yeah. They used outhouses, like her, at her grandma's house. Yeah, totally. I don't know.
Which, I mean, I can see that. I mean, you know, we had a farm in Mississippi, too, that belonged to our family. And there was an outhouse there, you know. We eventually put into a plumbing, but there was an outhouse. And it was used in the early days with the Sears catalog and a telephone book. You wipe your ass, you get to print of whatever page you used on a cheeky ass. There was just some dilemma. So, sticks out furthest in my mind, the thing with my mother and father was utmost respect. That's just foremost, and, you know, other than that.
So they didn't bitch about you guys because you guys did what you were supposed to do.
That's exactly right. But at the same time, you know, we had an old piano that belonged to my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And we could beat on that thing all day long. And my mother would be like, I've had enough of y'all. And my father would be like, let them play. That's all they're going to learn. That's all they'll learn. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
5 minutes ago, you know, one of my brothers was like, come on, Mom. Paya! Boom. He was laid out. That bitch was out. Who are you talking to? That's your mother. You know what I mean? Come on, Mom. Really? When you got kids nowadays going, fuck you, Mom, you fucking bitch. You know, we want to know, he needs love. No, he needs a foot up his fucking ass.
I like when you talk about the rotary phone and the pigtail, like.
Yeah, but that ain't real.
Yeah, that's so
real.
Funny.
30-foot fucking pigtail.
It's all cool. Yeah, you can never keep
and
that shit
in order.
And
he would get pissed off about things like that, you know, but hell, I play piano now today. My brother Luke plays piano. Two of my sisters play piano because that man let us beat on that all day long. You know what I mean? That was one of those things where just those things didn't matter. So there was a joy growing up in a house with a large family. And then there's the trial and tribulation of it. You know, everything's hand-me-down. Everything's secondhand. Everything's, you know, you, it's not about anything new. And, you know, but he was so that era, that World War II era, that you didn't quit. You didn't quit.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't join something and then say, I don't want to do this anymore. Especially not if it was a team sport. Because his big thing was every man or woman on that team is counting on you and you're just going to walk away. That's bullshit. And to this day, I will not leave my friends behind. I'm not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're building something or you're working on something, I want to be with you.
Did you ever
And
serve?
I'll be there to the end.
Did you ever serve?
Military?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay.
No, I wanted college. I wanted college and I wanted other things. I have family members who all served. And I love I can't do, none of us, we wouldn't be sitting here today if somebody wasn't protecting our rights and freedoms, you know? And a lot of people have different arguments to that. Well, you know, okay, well, you know, it's a very ill-informed individual. This country is protected and preserved by people who put themselves on the front line of things, and that's just the way it is. They're not always put on the front line for the right reasons. You know what I mean? That's a debatable argument. But an argument about our own freedom and who we are and having those rights
lifestyle
is done by other people.
Even if they're over there for business, that's preserving a lifestyle. You're the people who
absolutely.
If you took people's smartphones away, you know, I mean, yeah, people freak out, but about we're there for oil. Well, your phone's made of plastic. I mean, right. Yeah. So it's preserving a lifestyle. So I assume that comedy is important to you because it's how you make your living right now. Why else is it important to you?
It's the smaller comments I get from people after the shows. It's the ones of, I haven't smiled, I haven't laughed in a long time. It's the standing on stage and watching this little old lady in the audience that looked just like my mom in Syracuse, New York, and I freak out. And I hug her at the end of the show. It's the waiters and waitresses who work really, really hard. It's playing for that team that... that's greater than the individual. The stage is merely one ring on the wheel of comedy. The cook is the other. The dishwasher is the other. The front door guy. That wheel, and I will walk away when I am ready. But until then, this is important to me. And I love seeing the people that I work with. I don't go to a club where staff goes, "We hate this guy." I don't know one club I perform in the country that would ever say ill will word about me. None. And I would be surprised if there was one. And I would do everything I could to apologize and try to make that right. I love the idea of working with a team that brings laughter, that brings goodwill, that brings, something that... Because I'm a big immediate gratification person. I'm real big about immediate gratification. I want to plant a garden, and the flowers that I plant are going to already have blooms on them. don't tell me I'm going to plant that in a couple of weeks, I'm going to have blooms. Because if you ain't got a couple of blooms on it, then we ain't planting that shit today. I'll find another flower that's got some fucking blooms on it. Because I want some immediate gratification, you know what I mean? So I want to roll off the stage and say hello and thank you for coming. I want to shake hands. I want to say, I appreciate you taking the time to come to my show. And it's more than just support for my family. It's pretty cool. It's good, and I like the people I work with. I really, really do. Really do.
I feel like, have you ever been in sales? Because I just imagine you, your character, your voice, just like Men's Warehouse, where you just said, "I really do." Like you're gonna like the way you look, right? I can feel that.
I guarantee it.
Oh my god, that was hot. That was hot.
I was a director of marketing for adolescent psychiatric for 2 years, and public speaking all the way through school. You know, debate and God took public speaking. To advanced public speaking, masters of public speaking, and so on and so forth, and I don't know, you know, smoking probably has a lot to do with the depth of my voice.
Smoking weed
has probably got a depth to do with my voice sometime, and something like that, you know.
A depth to do.
Can I ask a question?
I don't know if I would want to do sales again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'd have to believe in the widget. Because I sold psychiatric help and the widget wasn't worth a fuck. And I'll never forgive myself for that. And I walked away from it. Good money. And it took me a long time to build my comedy money to that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I was the happiest struggling fucking family in the world because I had given up on something that I couldn't take anymore. I couldn't take it anymore. So I would have to believe in the widget. And you'd have to pay me to sell your widget. Because I can promise you, if I'm selling your widget, you're going to make some fucking money. I can promise you.
Guaranteed.
I'll sell a Jew a dead dog until he gets a hybrid. I had that motherfucker trying to enter that dead dog in the fucking American Kennel Association. And it'll just be drug along. What were you going to say?
I was going to ask you, when you're talking about, you know, having nine kids in the house and sharing one bathroom, did comedy come out of, like, was there other, like, siblings of yours that would... Like, love comedy? Like, does anybody else do comedy, like,
They would all do it if they could.
Yeah. Was it just like an attention thing? Like, because there's so many kids, like you had to do something to stand out?
That's exactly right. And that's exactly so, what I was alluding to a minute ago, and you are right. So you summed it up in, you know, there were so many, you had to do something to get attention. So the answer to your question is you answered it yourself. Yes. Okay. Absolutely. No. And I mean that with no derogatory intent. I'm just saying that you are right. You hit the nail on the head. And there are other brothers and sisters, pardon me, there are other brothers and sisters who are, you know, would love to do comedy, but they just don't have it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're that new person in comedy where you just go, whew, it ain't there yet, dog, but you keep on trying.
Passion versus talent.
Correct. But even if you don't have the passion anymore, sometimes a little bit of talent would just help you get over that. Are you shitting me? No, you can't stop there. Yeah. Crickets, crickets, babe, crickets. Pick it up, crickets. I have two brothers that are motivational speakers, and one of them travels to and from Singapore and works with safety in the oil field, and so he's doing seminars all the time. The other one speaks with Fortune 500 companies, banks, and institutions of education, and you know, and I've done motivational speaking, you know, all the time that I was doing comedy, and it started because as student government president, you had to speak to particular groups about particular subjects, and then from there it just branched on, and I just kept doing motivation. You know, motivational speaking is a lot like comedy. Do you have good material? Are there things to reflect back on? The difference is, in comedy, I can't take a passage from Robert Frost and bring it on a stage. And if I do, there's got to be some reason why I did it, or so on and so forth. And it's got to fit right in. Two Rows, a Virgin, a Yellow Wood might be a company's way of just saying, you got a chance to do this, which y'all did last year, or you got a chance to fail this year. Robert Frost wrote a poem at one time, said, Two Rows, a Virgin, a Yellow Wood, and be one travel along I stood. Here we are at that crossroads. And then, you know, they're looking at you like you're a fucking genius. And all you doing is saying, bitch, you want to do what you did last year? You want to fuck up like you did the year before?
Yeah.
And the greatest thing in motivational speaking is to find someone's mission statement. 90% of the people that work for companies do not even know their own fucking mission statement. You will have directors and supervisors and VPs of different departments that don't even know their fucking mission statement. Stand before a company and ask, how many people know your mission statement? You look around, and all of a sudden, the person in charge is going, oh, holy shit. No wonder we have bad communication. They don't even know what our mission is. And you know what? If he reads that thing and I don't like it anymore, that ought to not be our mission statement anymore. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So these two brothers are extremely strong in motivation. They try comedy sometimes. It just doesn't work, you know?
What do you think works for you?
I think I get away with stuff. You know, I get away with stuff.
Maybe were you the youngest?
Maybe it's the accent or whatever, but I get away with stuff. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
you
yeah.
do get away with stuff. You talk about race.
Absolutely.
And you do it well. Mm-hmm. And not just one race, multiple.
Multiple.
Women, I think you're really good with that. You have like a nice feminine quality to you when you want it, when you want to pull that. And then all of a sudden you do a switcheroo and start hitting on, you know,
the not
hitting,
yeah.
Well, you hit on whoever the fuck you want.
There was a definite hitting on the gay guy in the
front. Yeah.
Because he was adorable as hell, sweet as can be, there with his lover and some friends, and this guy with this voice and this rage on stage and who comes across extremely conservative, it's very important for me to him to know with me that we're okay and I love you. It's cool because this is how I feel about you. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. And my idea in life today right now, we have a problem. And the problem is that we have leaned so far now to the left that we're forgetting about common decency. And not common decency in taking care of someone else. Common decency in taking care of yourself. We got more people feeding on the system than are putting into the system, and we're fucking ourselves bad. Bad, bad, bad. And to me, I want to do comedy now that embraces that thought. You know, I wanted to talk about gay marriage immediately. I wanted to bring that up immediately. I wanted to touch that issue right away. I wanted to be in it. I was so excited. My two neighbors are going to get married. I'm so elated. I sold them their house. I'm elated about it, you know. Mm-hmm. and I'm glad that I touch on some subjects that are off, or not offensive, but are not the norm, you see? Because if I don't touch on them, then my saying I don't believe in political correctness has no worth to it.
Yeah.
You know? Has no worth to it.
Do you think, I don't know, this is a thought I come back to a lot in my head, where you bring a topic that is borderline offensive, like you're mentioning, or touchy. People, they feel a certain way about it, and they're afraid to feel differently about it. Do you kind of, I kind of get off personally getting on stage and bring a topic like that, and then letting them change their mind for like just long enough.
I call that the factor.
And then it gives them an out. It gives, you know, it gives them an opportunity to just change their mind just for a second, like, and not be afraid to change their. Do you?
Yeah, but remember this. You're right, but I want you to remember this in that point.
Okay,
and that is that second. You see, that second. I don't want to take something and go, there it is. See, I want to take it and I want to ease it over to you. And then when I'm going to ease it to you, I'm going to do it with laughter and a good punchline, and then I'm just going to set it back. See what I'm saying?
Right.
So I'm going to have fun with it. The things that are I'm going to punch you with may be that I direct to myself. You know what I mean? Such as joking with him or joking in the back, going, I went to sleep last night thinking about my, you know...
The pony.
I love my pony shirt. Yeah, yeah. You know what I'm saying? And he was just like, oh my God! You know what they went and did? Huh. They hauled ass to Walmart and bought me a I Love My Pony shirt.
Nice.
Dude, that's bizarre.
Wow.
That reflects back to, you know, what do you still do it for? I do it for those moments.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I'm going to go home and go to my wife and I'm going to go, look what I got. What the fuck? What did you? What?
I mean,
yeah. And I was like, dude, these two gay guys are just fell in love with me. You know, she's like, hey, that's nice. That's adorable. That's nice. Don't wear that shit. That's what she's gonna tell me, and then I'm gonna tell my daughter, look what I got for you. She's gonna be like, oh, that's nice, and she's gonna run off with it. You know what I'm saying? I do like the idea of touching on those subjects, but one of them is you have to be that confident in selling it. When I'm on that stage. And I say, if you got a Middle Eastern look, I'm going to eyeball you. You better come off. See, this is. Let me try to sum it up in all one. I don't care what you bring to stage, but you got to look like you can produce that. See, I had a young kid in St. Louis did a rape joke. Listen, some people will go, no, that's a subject that's completely off. Well, it depends on how you handle it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But you can't even do a joke like that. If you don't look like you can rape somebody. If you don't look like you can rape somebody, don't fucking do the joke. Are you shitting me? You can't come up there with khakis on with a $1.45, your little ears like this, take this place, and you gonna tear some ass? You fucking kidding me? My dog would laugh at you. Stop. No. So, you got to be able to sell that. When you say you're going to kick somebody's ass, you better be able to sell it. When you say you are going to crawl to the tops of Mount Everest, you better be able to crawl. When you say you're going to do it, that character, that person better be able to do it. You know what I mean? And so no matter what it is or what subject it is or how hard it is or how difficult it is, do I, one, believe in it? Because listen, if you don't believe in it, you ain't never going to sell it. And if you don't think that it can be accomplished by yourself, then you're never going to sell it. The worst thing in the world we can do is what federal government is doing to us right now is to assuming we're too ignorant to ask fucking questions. The moment I assume my audience is ignorant and I can just pass them some bullshit, I have fucking failed. You with me? I have got to be able to believe in what I'm doing and what I'm selling, not some that's why in good clubs you never try new material. You wait until you're doing an open mic or something else, but you don't roll up into a club with new material. You know, you work it out, you do what you got to do, and then you go into the clubs and you do what you got to do. Now, that doesn't work for everybody, but some people, you know, I might try something new, but, I mean, I can put it in my routine where it's not going to be, you know what I mean? It's not going to be any different. And I keep saying, you know what I mean, and I really shouldn't say that. If I'm going to try new material, I have the ability, and I have the whereabouts to get it in without you ever noticing that I put it in there. But when you're going to try something new and you go, ba-da-ba-ba, and it don't work, you're fucked. You just lost your LPM momentum, laughs per minute. You just lost your momentum. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of people don't care about momentum. A lot of people don't care about, you know, so what, man? Just get up and do your fucking blah, 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 blah. Okay, okay. See, you too focused on you're not focused on business. See, the guy that pays me wants me to get up here from beginning to end and do what he pays me to do. And so, you know, I don't know why I touch on issues, and I don't know why I do it the way I do it. I just do it. I have an issue with some things in life, and I just take it to that point, you know. And I'm,
social commentary, nothing wrong with that, and you do it well.
What is that writing process like for you, that coming to the stage, new material? Is that, do you pretty much have a set of topics you like and try to dig deeper into them, or maybe, or do you see new things, or do you experience new things that you, that... And you bring that to the
easiest thing in the world to do is expand what you already have. And you'll find that there's another avenue when you go to expand something. You go, wait a minute, wait, there's four roads over here. Yeah.
Right.
Wait, what? There's two over here. And expand on them and have some fun. Have some fun. I'll give you a quick, for instance. I love doing the bit about my son hunting. You know, and boom, boom. And then, you know, at the end, you know, I just go, slow down, son. We could buy a duck brush cheaper than that. Okay, that's your pop, pop, pop. All right, that's the end of the joke. But what can I do in there to throw some other things, you know? And my kids were throwing ball the other day, and the little bitty dog, he's the cutest little thing. I call him my little gay dog. He's the cutest little fella. And I've got a big Great Dane, a little gay dog. And this little dog, you know, when you go to throw the ball, you know, he stops, you know, and he just goes... And he just looks, and he's waiting to see it, you know? And then he looks back like, bitch, did you throw it? You know, and you go to act like you're throwing it, and he goes... And he's just looking for it. And I'm going, oh, my God, that's me looking for one of the ducks to fall out of the sky. So now, I'm you know, you hear... Bah, 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 and I'm doing the three shots. And then I was like a hunting dog. I was... Well, those three shots have now expanded into six moments of that joke... Before I get to, and the ducks kept flying. You see what I'm saying? Or I go ahead and end it with the ducks kept flying, and I look like the hunting dog, and I could just keep on going. So what is it that I can make? Because some people go, oh, yeah, that's that bit I do. Well, that's more than just that bit. This may be another whole routine. This could also be a whole special. You know what I'm saying? This could be a... She was outside earlier. Girlfriend's outside early, and she said something about her dad cutting grass. And you could tell when her father vacuums because he vacuums like he cuts grass. And there's the lines in the that's fucking hilarious. Because there again, the truth. See? Truth is much funnier than some bullshit. Truth is much funnier than bullshit. And I'm using the word bullshit for all handwritten comedy.
Yeah.
Truth is fucking way much funnier. There's some truth because now I'm sitting in her audience, if you will, when she's saying this, and my front of my land, my front hills on my property, you cut that wrong, I'm pissed. You got to go up, turn around, come back. Go up, turn around, come back. So that when you're driving in the driveway from a distance, you can see those lines. And then all of a sudden, she tells me this joke, and I'm going, oh, my God, oh, my God. Oh, my God, that's me. You know what I mean?
Right.
So here she was talking about something totally different. We branched off into a subject. She goes into about her father. Next thing you know, I'm going, that's another routine for you. That anal retentive father who... And she says her mama's on the opposite perspective. Well, great. She said her mama speaks, you know, hillbilly. Great. Because now we got a hillbilly woman with an anal retentive dude. What fucking mix is that? That's a God-given gift from God. That's your comedy gods going, dude. Like, you got a hillbilly mom and an anal retentive father. You can't write fucking comedy? You shitting me?
I can't too.
Go home. No, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I'm like, wait a second.
Not you.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just
saying. All right, well, we were talking about me, and it turned into everybody else, and then I was like, wait,
we're hopped up, like, yes, I can. We were just like,
yeah. You know. I just have two things. First thing, I just want to mention that we are at the Looney Bin, and thank you, Jeremy, for letting us use this spot, because this is great.
Thank you, Jeremy.
And can we just say thank you to Jeremy?
Thank you, Jeremy.
Jeremy rocks the party.
Jeremy has been really supportive of local comics, and that is a really great thing to have, because we had... Looney Bin's the only place... Well, it doesn't...
We don't even get into it, but thank you, Jeremy.
And the second is, so how did you get involved in comedy? Like, how old were you? Where were you at in your life? And, like, give us, you know, like, a brief little...
Real quick, senior in high school, my brother's a male stripper. He belongs with a group called U.S. Male. They need an MC. I'm a young kid. I all of a sudden start MCing this strip group. Now if I could take that into my senior year, my freshman year of college, and I am an MC. This is the early 80s. And this guy tells me, he says, you think you can do comedy? I said, yes. Comedy was, you know, comedy places were popping up all over the place. And I went on stage and failed. Failed, miserably failed. Failed. Oh,
do you remember your material
failed.
At all?
Failed, son. Failed.
You don't want to hear it.
Failed, son. Failed. It was bad. It was
good. That's good.
It was bad. It was
so good. You have to fail, right? Yeah,
absolutely. Failed something miserably. But what I did get was a feeling of, oh, I'm going to be here. I will be here. And then put myself through school that way.
I love the start of that. Just the start of that. It goes back to, you said, like, truth is stranger than fiction. That kind of, the start of that story was, I was 17, senior in high school, my brother was a male stripper, and then I laughed. Like, that was,
yeah.
That was just the start, and then you kept, and every word just kept getting, you know, crazier. U.S. Male, they needed an MC. It was just, like, it just
That's
kept
right.
building the stakes.
Even to the
higher.
Crescendo where you say, yeah. And I failed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I failed. And I did. I'll never forget it. I failed. It's horrible. I sucked ass. And not in a good way. I can't. I do good now, but back then I didn't suck ass good at all. I just
suck ass properly now.
But you kept at it and you kept going. And was there, what was the like local comedy like clubs there in Louisiana? Right?
Well, they had this guy that booked a club in Baton Rouge, and he was actually my mentor, who took me right after I finished college and I quit that job. But there was a Sunday night that a guitar player played music and I did comedy. And he would play for 20 minutes, I'd do comedy for 20 minutes, he'd do play for 20 minutes. And then at the end we'd do things together, you know, and he'd play and we'd sing little songs together. And long, long time ago, you know, all of those type of things. Bye, bye, Miss American Pie. And then we'd do antics while we were doing it. And I'd make up other fucking words to say, you know, ride my moped up on stage. Oh, God. Perform in boxer shorts. Whatever you had to do to get
a laugh.
Whatever you had to do, dude. And I used to go up there with a book. I looked like a fucking grown Jenny Garofalo. So stupid.
Yes.
It was so ridiculous. Sickening. It was like, bitch, really? You're a professional. You got a notebook? What the fuck? Get off the pills.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, buddy came up to me and goes, hey man, throw that fucking book away. And I'm like, I know, but sometimes people in the audience, you know what, people in the audience, next time somebody fucks with you from stage, tell them fuck you, we'll throw them out. So next time I was like, fuck you out of here. Fucking bouncers go, what do you mean? Oh, you gotta go. Then people started coming to my show just to watch me throw somebody out. It was so something's going. Stupid. It was so stupid. It was so stupid. So stupid, bro. It was so stupid. I can't believe I did that. But whatever, you know what I mean? I don't know, dude. I forgot the original fucking question. The brief started. History in the back of my mind. I was like, what the fuck have I just relived?
So did you travel a lot? Like, go to place, like outside of Louisiana?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I started driving.
Some stories.
Started driving, buddy. Young kid, married, wife working as a apparel designer. She designed women's gowns, worked for a company called San Carlin. And I was in a Infiniti G20 and drove to Fargo, North Dakota, came back down through Des Moines, would drive all the way up into Ohio, drive through the Carolinas, down into Florida. And but I was fortunate. I was very fortunate. I was one of those ones where I didn't stay in any position very long. And it wasn't about me knocking somebody out, because that's what a lot of comedians make the mistake. I get young comedians roll in on me sometimes too, going, yeah, well, I normally headline. Okay. 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 You one of them. Okay. Because there's three kind of comics in this world. There's the opener, who says I'm normally a feature. The feature, who says I'm normally a headliner. And the headliner who says, look, don't tell nobody, I usually get paid more money than this. You with me?
Yeah.
So all you comics, hear me well. The opener who once says he's a feature, the feature who says he's a headliner, and the headliner who says he makes more money. Let me make this clear to your prick-ass fucking faces. If you accept the gig, shut the fuck up and do it, and don't worry about the position you're in or discussing it with somebody else. Because you're going to come open for me one day, and I'm going to tell you to bring it on. And then I'm going to tell you to sit your fucking ass down while I wear you the fuck out.
This is my
there
dude.
There it is.
This is my dude.
It's just, you know what I'm saying, seriously. I mean, they just roll in, some young comics roll in sometimes, you know, and tell you what, son, do your best, do your best. Do your best. If you're good, I'll switch places with you. Give you my check. I know that ain't happening. I know that ain't happening because that alone puts so much pressure on an individual that says they're that good that they just shit themselves. Mm-hmm. They shit themselves. And you hear people complaining in this business too all the time of, you know, oh God, please. Quit this business. This is so not what you need to be in.
So who were your inspirations growing up? Comedian-wise.
Oh, man.
Because we were talking about last night, and you have a lot of, like, Robin Williams,
yes.
Like, very quick, very just...
you know, I get that a lot. I get that a lot, but bear with what I'm about to tell you, because there's two people that I admire more than anything in the world. And it's funny that there is a order of which they each help one another, and it goes down to Robin Williams. Robin Williams is not one of them. Robin Williams happened to be one of the biggest thieves in the business. He'd go into an open mic night, and next thing you know, he'd be doing some comedy thing somewhere, and every open micer's fucking material was being done. They were like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? What I did enjoy about him was his theater training.
Yeah.
See? And he brought that. He brought that. That.
He sold it. He sold
that,
it.
That. Renaissance,
yeah.
That Shakespearean, he was fucking, that was brilliant. He was brilliant, okay? Okay, so let's eliminate that. Jonathan Winters, who mentored Robin Williams. Jonathan Williams was probably the funniest. He was a prop comic before Carrot Top ever put...
Jonathan Winters, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Jonathan Winters.
Okay.
Jonathan Winters was prop comic way before Carrot Top ever started taking steroids or wearing mascara or putting on fake eyelashes. Winters would have him fill that trunk up, and he'd just pull things out of that trunk. If you ever get to watch the movie, it's a mad, 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 mad world, and Jonathan Winters is a tow truck driver, and all he says in that whole segment is, you ain't got a spare? You ain't got a spare. And they with a flat tire, and they go, no. And that's all. That's the only words he uses. And he folds his arms, and he goes, no spare. And they're like, no, dude, we ain't got a spare, you know? And then he'd change it, and he'd walk around, and he'd go, no spare. We ain't got a spare.
It was like 50 fucking times. Each time he said it, you'd just be like, what?
You know? And you got people turning around, what the fuck? You know, he's like, no spare, no spare. He was really, really, when he did the old granny, you know, he was doing drag before, you know, in that kind of situation, long before Madea, you know what I mean? He was doing characters long before Whoopi. He was doing, you know, these things, and sometimes people forget, you know, oh, he's brilliant with that, you know? That was done. That was done. There ain't none of us that original. Where people go, you know how many times people have talked about the material I talk about with kids and want to put a foot in a child's ass? There's so many, you know? Mm-hmm. How you sell it is a whole nother ballgame. Mm-hmm. And before Jonathan Winters was a comic named Red Skelton.
Awesome, bringing that up too,
Red Skelton was Jonathan Winters' mentor. There wasn't an actor in history that could perform in front of Red Skelton and not lose their shit. And it was something he did with his eye that wasn't facing the camera. So to face looked natural, but just one eye, he'd make it go crazy. And even, you know, he and Dean Martin bet one another one time, and Dean Martin bet Harvey, what's his name? That performed Oswald. With Carol Burnett, Harvey. Harvey Korman was on the Carol Burnett show, and so was Tim Conway. And they bet each other like $1,000 pop. You know, they all threw in money that Dean Martin wouldn't be able to hold his shit together. And Dean went up there with a cigarette, you know, and he tried to blow smoke at him and whatever, and drink, and they were doing their lines together. And he fucking started doing that fucking eye.
Lose it.
Can't have seven, bitch! You know, just losing his shit. Every time he walked, there'd be bells behind him. You know, when he did this little routine, you'd have to watch old clips of Red Skelton. It's really funny. Those comics, you know, those are the ones that really just catch me. Mm-hmm. And then I love, you know, I don't watch comedy. You know, I don't turn the Comedy Channel on and watch comedy. That's torture to me. Torture! Because the whole time I'm thinking, get him off! It's my turn! Mm-hmm. I have to go!
Man, he gives me shit all the time for not watching a whole lot of comedy, man.
The only reason I'm
just saying, the more I hear more comedians say they don't really watch comedy, the better I feel, because I am afraid of stealing shit, and also I want to be on that stage, and I want to do. I don't want to just watch. I just want
to
do.
I definitely think there's two. Yeah, there's. I've talked to a lot who say I'm not really. Not that they're not a fan. Like, they like comedy, but it's just like I don't need to. I don't want to. There's no desire, and I can't get enough. Like, I watch all the time.
I want to know what's out there. I need to know what's out there.
I think it just. Enjoy it
if I am hearing the same bitch say stuff that I'm saying, then of course I want to be like, all right, well, I'm not going to hit that subject because
I really get tired of certain genres of comedy. Like, I don't like black comedy. I don't like the, you know, white man, the whole thing. Ooh, that just gripes my ass. I'm like, ooh, you weak piece of shit. I don't like comedy that has some diehard, you know, liberal twist to it of saving the world and whatever, and I'm going, ooh, I just can't handle it. I just can't handle it. I just can't. You know, all the ones, some things, you know, of, you know, putting a screwdriver in a soft spot of a baby's head. Those things just don't make Stanhope, you know. Stanhope don't make me laugh. He makes me vomit. I find him a disgusting human being. I would never want to work with him. You had people who were much more edgy than him.
We just worked with some of his colleagues recently, and we discovered that.
Yeah. The Unbuckables, yeah, it was a disaster.
Andy Andrews.
How did that work out?
Andy Andrews and James Inman. It was. We're being
it
real.
Why?
Yeah.
Just let it go.
No, it's just saying.
You brought it up with the laugh. And when
it didn't go over well.
Well, we're allowed to be real. I mean, fuck. There are people and we're people. We have feelings and we didn't.
I like the dark stuff.
They're
exactly
really
what you said. That was abrasive in my head when you said. But I like digging into the dark stuff and seeing, you know, changing your mind about it, seeing what you find. But they were incoherent. And I don't enjoy that.
So they were belligerent, and their material wasn't there, and
they just didn't care.
It was just bad.
That's the thing, too. And, you know, with all names left out, if you look at the individuals, you kind of go, that person.
Sad.
You see, now listen to this. If I have to watch comedy, I want to watch a new person. See? I want to watch somebody new. And the reason why I want to watch somebody new is because I enjoy you. Let me tell you something. I enjoyed watching our opening act. You know, when he joked about,
Biggs?
Yeah. When he jokes about running away.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
You know what
cops.
I mean? He's just going to start running. That's self, you know,
self-defecating.
Yeah. That's just, I oh my God. When he talks about a vagina, you know, and or sharing, you know, pants, and you don't wear underwear, and he goes, let's just say me and a friend, you know, our relationship was close enough, or however he words that. You know what I'm saying? That's fucking hilarious. I was over there making an ass of myself laughing because I just, and I don't even think he knows how funny that fucking bit is. I don't think he gets how funny that no effort, you see? where I've got to do effort in everything I say, where he, no effort, just kind of goes, you know, let's just say, however he says
it. It's just like, it's gross. Yeah. It's just gross. Yeah.
Yeah, however, let's just say me and my buddy, we now have a relationship and we share pants.
He's whatever. Very comfortable.
Like, yeah, and he just says it. And then they just start laughing. Yeah. He's the only comic I ever known to get a line out of this. Out of this. Look. Okay, never mind that. And they fucking fall out laughing. And I'm going, that bitch didn't say shit. And he's like, you know, he'll start it off going, you know, the itchy vagina. Never mind. People are like, no, we want to know about the itchy vagina. And then he goes, okay, look, I don't have a vagina. Oh, okay, really? And I really wouldn't know how to take care of one. I don't, you know, there again, it's the stupidity of ignorance where he's going, I don't have a vagina. I don't know how to take care of one.
You gotta get it maintained like once a year.
I mean, you gotta go get it.
Which related to me. He actually related to me because like, there's like dick and ball jokes and whatever, but I had actually had my vagina checked out, had my yearly checkup same day he said that joke.
Wow. That's
and I was just
insane.
Like, that is Biggs right now. Yeah, you're right. You do have to get that shit maintained.
That's really
and
good.
Answer these fucking questions.
That's why I like watching some of those
get fingered without wanting to.
Absolutely. Or could you warm that? Could you? You got a bucket of hot water you could dip that in first? Because you're killing me with that. Don't get stainless steel. It's frigid in here.
He totally was relating.
Happy birthday, Biggs.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Happy. Oh, you guys, today's Biggs' birthday.
Is it his B-Day?
Yeah.
Happy birthday to
and
you.
And we interviewed him. So by the time this episode airs, hopefully our listeners will have gotten to know Biggs a little bit more. So.
We'll just release it next year on his birthday, so it'll be...
No.
It's actually like I don't like the word godfather so much. It just sounds so... Anyway, but he...
Well, he could be.
He was in the very first wave of Wichita. The very first wave of Wichita comedy. So he's been in it, I don't know, 13, 14 years or some shit. But yeah, I mean, he's... We owe him a lot, probably.
Shit's maybe. Growing. Yeah, he's helping.
I wouldn't tell him that to his face, but...
He told me I suck to my face. I was like, cool, at least you're listening. you're funny.
I wanted to ask you about odd jobs and or the CSI and your wife. Your wife having a CSI. She works in the CSI. And then what odd jobs have you worked?
I was an oyster shucker. Worked as an oyster shucker for years. A restaurant at night.
Shucks.
I know. I worked offshore.
Just have one odd job.
I don't know how many things I have gone through in life. Cut grass to make ends meet. Whatever it takes, you know, whatever it takes to achieve. And now I don't slow down because I have kids and they need to see somebody who works hard. So when I'm home, I have 15 rental units. I want to get up to about 25. That way at the age of 60, I can start looking to retire.
Mm-hmm.
How old are you right now?
51.
Okay.
I'm not looking to be in this. I don't want to be Uncle Larry. I don't know if y'all know who that is, but he's a good guy. I don't want to be Grandma from Hell. I don't know if y'all know who that is. She's a great woman. But these people are working... some because they have to and others because they want to. I don't want to do that till the day I die. This is not what I'm doing the day I die. It's not going to be that. No, it's not. Will I still do it? Probably. Will I do it like I'm doing it now? Fuck no. Absolutely not. I'm going to take my wife by the hand and we're going to go walk down Canal Street and we're going to go shop and we're going to eat and drink and we're going to have evening wine and we're going to watch the steamboats and we're going to go back to our apartment and we're going to sit on the balcony and I'm going to load a bowl and she's going to finish drinking wine and I'm going to smoke a bowl and we'll wake up in the morning and do our thing. And I want to have a retirement on my terms, not on some financial terms that I got to keep doing something. That's not going to happen. The greatest thing my wife could have did for our family, unbeknownst to me at the time, was to go back to school. So at 40 years old, she decides she's going to go back to school for forensics. I had a dilemma about it, never verbally expressed it, but I had a doubting dilemma about what the fuck are we doing at 40 years old going back to school. And now she's a CSI detective. But what she did was, is in the preeminitive years of my children's life, the focal point of their development between the ages of, you know, 3 and 11, you know, there's debates about where they are. If you don't have complete control of a child by 11, you are fucked. You are fucked. You better have some money for some therapy. And during that time period, I'll be damned if those kids didn't watch their mother go to school and sit at that counter and do that homework and work on calculus and work on forensic sciences and work on altercational confrontation and so on and so forth, and books laid out all about it. And because she did that, those kids got a lesson of that that's just part of who we are as a family. It's not that I want you to do it. It's who we are, you see. I don't sell my kids on stuff of this is what we want you to do. You know, they know that this is what we're about. Academics is a big thing in my family. You're going to go to school. You know, she's Chinese. You ought to try her in gymnastics. Shut the fuck up. You know, I had a brother tell me that one time. She needs to be in gymnastics. Man, you know what? Chinese are also very brilliant. I'm going to take the brilliant. Because I think she'll make a lot more money being brilliant than she will be flipping on some fucking high beam somewhere. So those formative years of my kids watching their mother go to school, priceless. Priceless. And now she's just chick with a badge and a unit and guns
and handcuffs. And
pretty hot, huh? Like that?
No, it's not really my thing.
Really?
No. No. You'll lick an ass, but you won't.
I'm not about I'm not about being dominated. You know what I mean? And I'm not really about dominating. You know, yeah, I will lick a good ass, and it's going to be sick. I'll start from your toes. It'll be way before. You busting up before I get to your ass. The ass will just be the cleanup. The ass will just be the...
You're killing Jessica.
Right, yeah. I'm wet. No.
Have you ever quit comedy? Have you ever just like, I can't do it, Mike. This is... I can't do it anymore. I just got it. You've always just kept it.
Never.
So how many years have you been doing
that?
20, almost
30. I mean, probably.
Yeah.
I thought you said early 80s.
It was early 80s.
So at least 30 years.
And so, you know, 10 years ago I used to say, I'm only in this like 15 years. You know what I'm saying? So now I'm like 20 something. And then, you know, you get a fucking mathematician who goes, no, dude, that'd be 30. You're fucking hilarious. What the kid?
Time to fly.
I'm sorry. Okay, I ask this to. Okay, what are you afraid of?
I'm claustrophobic. I don't like heights. I'm afraid of nasty people. I'm afraid of nasty people. And what I mean nasty is in the heart and mind. I'm afraid of nasty people. I will kill them before they kill me. I don't like nasty people.
So the elevators must be horrible.
Elevator's not an issue for me. I'm not confined. Yeah. I'm not confined.
Well, it's the people for me. I don't like... I don't freak out in elevators, but I don't know that guy. You know,
right.
Like there's, I don't know.
Right. Overcome those things by being the asserter in the beginning. When you step on an elevator, you don't know anyone, just put them on guard by this. Good morning. How are you doing? Good morning. You would be surprised by a tone of voice, somebody who's even thinking of doing something going, holy fuck, this ain't to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I walk into a crowd. How are you doing? Nice to see you. How are you? How are you? Somebody walks up to me. Hey, dude, you know, your show sucks. That's fine, sir. It's over now. Good day. Good day, sir. Good day.
Good day.
You know, nasty people things. I want to walk into a situation feeling like I'm okay. So I don't like being confined. I don't like heights. Where
like
I'm scared.
Planes.
And no, I'm good in planes.
Good
I'm not confined.
Yeah.
You know, bind me and, oh, God, I'll go nuts. Really high heights where
how
I have
often
to work
are
on something.
Yeah.
You know, I get scared, you know. I got an old house. I'm on a tall ladder. So I'm scared to death. Walking on roofs, I have to do it, but I'm scared to death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll go do it. and nasty people. Nasty people just, oof, nasty people.
You're afraid of them?
Nasty, physically?
Physically
sanitation.
Doesn't bother me at all. That's why I specify that, nasty in mind and soul. Okay. People who are just dirty, I want to take them home and wash them. Yeah. You need a bath? Come on. Yeah, scrub your head, dog. Scrub your head. Put this on your face. They help you out there in that sun. Now put that shit back on. Get the fuck out of here. Take care, buddy. I love being dirty, you know, in the sense of, you know, my kids and I, we swim in the bayou, you know. Mm-hmm. We go skiing in the Chafalaya. I don't care about dirt. Dirty is not an issue to me. My son is like me, you know. Mama calls us grinds, you know. You fucking nasty. Y'all nasty. You haven't bathed since yesterday. And I'm like, well, we went swimming. Yeah, in the bayou. Are you kidding me? You nasty fuck. You're nasty. Dirtier now. You're nasty.
I read your credentials out there. They talked about MTV, and then you opened for Jerry Seinfeld. Can you touch on those two subjects?
MTV was spring break. MTV, we first went to Daytona Beach. I opened up with the Bengals. And that was when Downtown Judy Brown was still a DJ. And I shared a tent with Tone Loc.
Oh, yeah.
And that was when he came out with Wow Thing. Yeah. And smoked a joint with he and Samantha Fox. And then we had to do the MTV special, and Jerry Seinfeld opened up. But, you know, back then, Jerry was nothing more than a headlining comic. Mm-hmm. That's all he was. He had premiered on The Tonight Show or something.
Did he have a show by then?
Oh, hell no.
Well, this is...
hell no, dog. No. I had a full head of hair. It was brown. Oh, no. I never had one great pubic hair. It was fucking beautiful back then. I must have been good. I had nuts still... shrunk up during cold weather. No, this was a while ago. So that was MTV with him. And they picked four people across the country. They divided the nation into four, and I got the Southeastern win on that shit. And they just brought us up into there. And then from that event, we went to New York, and we did the Charlie Rose show. And his producer came to me and said, why do I, and that was in the beginnings of all of the, you know, can't say certain things, you know, just that and the other. And she said, we're getting ready to walk in, and she goes, can I talk to you for a second? I said, yeah, sure can, yes, ma'am. And she goes, why do you find it necessary to use a black voice when you're on stage? And I was really completely shocked and taken back, and I said, do you ever get out? She said, excuse me? I said, do you ever get out? I'm Southern. I'm born and raised in New Orleans. This is who I am. And she goes, well, you sure sound different on the stage. And I said, yeah, probably you're different probably outside of this confined area. And she said, what does that have to do with it? I said, never bring that shit up to me when it's just you and I. Because I'll show you, nigga. I turned around and walked off. She was fucking furious. I don't want to understand the other. He's not going to blah, blah, blah. So, boom. And we're on. So how are you guys enjoying New York? I was doing fine until I met your producer. Really, really? What are we doing? What we have here? No, let's stay on this topic because your producer just told me I talked black. She didn't like the idea. She evidently has some racial thing. I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, go ahead. What was your question? And then from there, I just never stopped.
Yeah.
You know, so. Jerry Seinfeld, fun. MTV. I don't know. I watch young people today try to make it in such ways that are so, you know, did Montreal Comedy, you know, I tried to audition for Montreal Comedy like four times for new faces. And then they call me up and go, hey, we want you in the Masters. What the fuck? Bitch, you just turned me down for new faces three times. On this fourth audition, now you want me in the Masters? You gotta be shitting me. So I look at these kids now who are trying to get credits for themselves, you know, Last Comic Standing. They know who's going to win Last Comic Standing. You notice it's now called Invitationals. Who sends out the invites? Who sends out the invites? You see what I'm saying? Are you kidding me?
Tweet us the answer. Who sends out the invites? Hashtag.
Really? Yeah, exactly.
Someone tell
who
us.
Who blew who to get one?
Motherfuckers.
Who's promised to get some kind of deal done? You see what I'm saying? So they already know.
The Illuminati. Know.
That's why you had people like Drew Carey.
Mm-hmm.
Boom! He flew off that show fast. Laverne from Penny Marshall. Mm-hmm. Boom! She flew off that thing.
That's always been producer. The complaint with the show, is that the finalists, I can't remember who it was, but yeah, there's been all sorts of interviews where one person was always set up, the manager was in good with so-and-so, and yada yada. I mean, you have amazing comics come from that show, don't you? Kristen Key comes through Looney Bins, and yeah, she doesn't...
Dude, and I got news for you. Those ones that come off of those shows,
yeah.
Just because you did a show don't mean you're funny. Nothing is more hilarious for me than to watch a comedian who was on some kind of show now is headlining. And he can only do 15 minutes. You know, the greatest example of that was the black dude that had the
Kid and Play?
Kid, is that his name? Or Kid and Play? What was his name?
From House Party?
Yeah.
Christopher Reed.
Christopher Reed.
Yeah.
That's the guy's name?
Yeah.
From House Party?
No.
Is this name? Kid and Play?
Christopher Reed was the Superman.
Reed.
Reed.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever the case may be, he was one of those ones. That cat didn't even have 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. So he had to bring a headliner with him to do the actual show, and then just last 15 minutes, he'd go out there and do some things, and then that'd be the end of the show. So I look at these kids who are coming off some of these shows and thinking that they're all that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he's right. Christopher Reed.
There you go.
It reminds you also talk about, like...
The sister with the hairdo.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I was crying last night. It was so funny.
My sister with the hairdo always is a good one. She does a good job for me. And it's funny because I know, you know, most people who come to my show, who have been to my show before, don't come to listen to me. They know what's coming and they want to watch the audience's reaction.
Yeah, because I was watching the two over here, the lady and the guy, and you were talking to them, and then you kind of did like more like little crowd play and stuff, and then there was like a table back where I was sitting, and it was like all older people. And they kind of just, you know, in the beginning of the show, I was watching them, and then at the end of it, like, they were just dying. Like, they were just...
It takes you some time to get used to something.
Mm-hmm. You're just rapid fire, like, go, go, go.
Night, you didn't even, like, I think I went outside, smoked a cigarette, came back, and you were already on. Like, you were just on and, like, let's go. Like, it wasn't, like, you didn't kind of feel, and that's what I liked.
Oh, full throttle all the way.
Yeah, just the whole, like, the energy was just, it was there. And it kept me just wanting more. That was a good show.
Different.
So you have been super passionate earlier. You told us about your kids last night outside. I thought that was awesome. Today in here, I felt like you were welling up with emotion, talking about how prideful you are of, you know, comedy and what you're doing. And how do you find that balance between touring and doing what you love and being with the people you love? How do you work that out?
You don't.
You just have to have an understanding.
You put up with it.
Yeah.
You put up with it. And you don't look back. And you keep moving forward. And whatever emotions you got to get out, you get them out. Whether it's a head in the pillow or a walk somewhere where nobody else is, or having somebody in your life that you love enough where you can bury your head in that neck and just let it all out or laugh with it and enjoy it. You know what I mean? Nothing inspires me more than to watch an underdog make it. Nothing inspires me to watch somebody who is underestimated achieve big. Sometimes when I have to get things off my chest and I can't, some people will go and listen to music, some people will go and take walks, some people will write, some people will do a lot of things, you know. If I really just like, I just want to get things off, I will go sit at a computer, which is usually the only time I sit at a computer. I don't travel with one, I don't, you know what I mean? I'll go to home and I'll pull up auditions and I'll watch people who are underestimated. The guy who was the mail clerk in England with the fucked up teeth who sang, you know, Pavarotti, better than Pavarotti, and nobody had faith in him. And while he's singing, I'm bawling. When one of my kids tell me they can't do something and I watch them succeed, that blows me away. There is no balance. There is no, you know, formula for it. I miss home. I miss my family. I miss my family a lot. Every time I wake up and go away, I miss my family. But I have a great family. I have cool wife. I have great kids. I have a great family. I have a great home. I got a truck. I'm excited about my truck. It's a nice truck, too. I got a nice truck. It's a Chevrolet Silverado, bro. Fondo, bitch.
Is the bed a full bed?
It's a cream color. No, it's a six-footer.
Oh. I wish it was a full bed boat, but I don't care that much.
But it's my deal, you know? And my lawnmower, you know? I don't know. There's no balance, partner. There's no balance. You ever see people that tell you there is, and they try to tell you their formula or how they're doing things or what they're doing? You just look at them going, there's no balance. I write a lot. I write a lot in a journal now. I had a journal through college, but I started about 15 years ago for my kids, and I write where I am, and what I'm feeling, and what I say, and what I do sometimes, and people I've met. You know, last night I wrote in there about I got an I Love My Pony rainbow shirt from two gay guys that I think I would have run off with. I loved them. They were so kind to me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, parentheses, don't worry. You know, and they'll never get that at 17 years old. You know, they'll never get it at 14 and 12. But when I'm dead and gone and they're in their 60s and they're sitting there going, man, let me tell you about your papa. Look at this. Yeah. Look at this, bro. Back in 1996, we'll be in 2028, you know.
Yeah.
Back in 1996, they'll be like, what the fuck? You know what I'm saying? Oh, Jesus Christ, that was, who was alive back then? You know?
They had electricity?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. There's no
internet?
There's no balance. There's no balance.
So. Yeah. So typically we end the show with like a mission statement from the guest. So something that wraps up you and your view on life.
Yeah. Mission statement, motto.
Words of wisdom, parting shot.
He's thinking.
Wow. There's too much to narrow down in one line. There's too many complications to solve in a single paragraph. And there's too many educated derelicts to accept all wisdom from individuals who think that they are. So, I'll leave this. The greatest gift. Let's not make it a religious thing, so let's just make it a statement of history so that there's a common ground. There's one book that has affected man more than any other book in the entire history of humanity. It's one book that has sold more copies than any other book in humanity. And we know the book I'm speaking of. It's the Bible. Bible is a basic on the New Testament. The life of an individual, some call the Son of God, some call a great prophet. His name was Jesus. And we think that he was all about love. That wasn't his greatest gift he gave us. See, wasn't his greatest gift he gave us. Because every time he entered into or exited a place, he always said, my peace I give to you. So what are you doing to give somebody peace? What are you doing in this business to bring peace? What are you doing to make it easier on the waitress? What are you doing to make it easier on the manager? What are you doing to bring peace to that facility where people have to work? So you roll up in there with 15 people in your posse and everybody wants fucking steaks, but you didn't add that into the cost of your fucking coming to that club. And now you got a manager scrambling to figure out how his food costs got so fucking high. You roll into that club with a bad attitude and you holler at some waitress and she's just trying to make ends meet because her baby just had to go get braces and she can't even afford them, but you're going to roll in there and make her feel like shit. You're going to send in a rider that you don't want anybody to look at you like you some fucking special hood rat. Fuck you, die. What are you leaving in the wake of yourself as a human being in the concept of peace? What are you leaving? What are you giving somebody? This business is enough of fools and bullshit. Just try to leave some peace. Leave it in one tact. That way somebody else has the opportunity of coming to work here because that's our job. That's his and my job this week. We got to do a good enough show this week where this club stays open, and next week another comic can come. Or next week two open acts can get up and do some time that they were promised for whatever reason. Or there could be another open mic night where other kids or individuals had the opportunity. Peace. What are you doing peace at home? What are you doing peace at work? What are you doing with peace with your friends, with people you don't know? Peace. Quit worrying about loving everybody and making everybody love you. Just be peaceful. Just be peaceful. And take nothing less. Take no prisoners who do not deliver peace. And those who do not deliver peace, may the wrath of God strike them like motherfuckers. What are you doing to help somebody? This is a wonderful business we're in. It really, really is a wonderful business. But it has its pitfalls. And I would sure rather reach down from the ladder and lift somebody up than be at the top and chastised for not bringing somebody with me. It's hard to sit at the top. It's very difficult to sit at the top. It's much easier when you've pulled people up there with you and they're standing on your side. I'll do it by myself, but I do much better when friends are next to me.
Ladies and gentlemen, Major Cajun John Morgan.
Woo! Thank you. That was great.
Thank you so much for taking time out.
And digest that.
Yeah. Midwest Digest. Thanks for coming through the Midwest.
Thank you, Jeremy, again for letting us use the Looney Bin, and thank you, John. That was great. I'm excited to see your show tonight.
I like that your motto is.
You're going again tonight?
Hell yeah.
You are a motivational speaker.
Big boy coming tonight again. Radio.
Hank, the mechanic.
Hank.
Oh,
the
mechanic. Yeah, he was. All right. There it was, the Raging Cajun, Mr. John Morgan himself. Wonderful talk. Hey, man, thanks for meeting up with those guys. Sorry I missed out. I'll look forward to seeing you next time you're in Wichita. Speaking of stand-up in Wichita, don't forget the Brooks Whelan Show is October 20th at Roxy's. Tickets are online. Go get those, please. Speaking of that, thank you once again to the Monarch Gastro Pub located at the Delano Roundabout and 42 Below located just east of Washington on Douglas. Those two have helped us bring Brooks Whelan to town, and we couldn't be more appreciative. Go give them some love. Thank you, Domestic Drone, for giving us the sweet tunes we always use. Thank you, Looney Bin, for letting my guys sit down over there at the spot to talk to this guy. And thank you all for listening. Y'all have a wonderful week. We'll be back later.